On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When it comes to oil and war, Halliburton Co. out of Texas knows how to play big and play tough. In the mid-90s, it hired a former U.S. Defense Secretary, Dick Cheney, as CEO. When Cheney became vice president and the U.S. went to war in Iraq, Halliburton became the Pentagon's biggest private contractor there. Big as in $25 billion in U.S. tax dollars big. Big as in nearly $3 billion in waste and overcharges alleged by federal investigators. Now Halliburton is moving its corporate headquarters right out of the USA to flashy Dubai in the Middle East and leaving behind a tremendous hullabaloo. Up next on Point, Halliburton on the march or on the run. We'll hear from big views from Dubai and Texas in this hour, but joining me first today from Philadelphia is Russell Gold. He covers Halliburton for the Wall Street Journal. Russell Gold, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what does the business world see going on in the Halliburton move, Russell?
Well, I think the business world doesn't see anything going on here other than a company which needs to reposition itself to get closer to its customers in order to grow again. This is a company that's become very focused on North America and its oil field service business, but the future of the oil business is not in North America. It's in the Middle East. It's in Asia. And Dave Lazar setting up his office in Dubai is an effort to get closer to many of the customers he's going to need in order to grow the company.
Russell, what is the oil field services business? What does that mean exactly? Halliburton is number two in the world, but what does that entail?
Right, exactly. When a company like Exxon wants to drill a well, it usually doesn't actually drill the well itself. It figures out where it wants to drill the well. It leases up the acreage, but then it turns to someone like a Halliburton or a Schlumberger, which is the world's largest oil field service company, or Baker Hughes, all of which are American companies, to actually do the drilling. So they drill the wells. They pump. They create the pressure to crack open the rock formations deep underground. They run the rigs. Everything you need to actually drill into the ground and get the oil out.
So on the oil and energy side, I'm reading here, Halliburton, is it 60% of that business in the U.S., or it made 60% of its revenues off that business in the U.S.?
When I checked last night, last year, 50% of its revenue and a little bit more of its income came from North America, so it would be the U.S. and Canada.
So when it moves David Lazar to Dubai, what are the oil drilling settings that it has its eye on?
Well, I think very clearly the Middle East. There's a lot of exploration still in Saudi Arabia, in the Emirates, in offshore Qatar, where there's huge amounts of natural gas, and down the road, frankly, in Iran and Iraq. A very chaotic environment clearly in Iraq right now, but in 10 years, the situation might be completely different. And further than that, there are a lot of very strong national oil companies in Asia, places like Malaysia and Indonesia, and China is growing as an explorer, so is India, that are going to need some of the expertise that Halliburton has.
So you mentioned Iraq and Iran. That brings a couple things to mind. But first, Halliburton, this was a surprise or news to me, Halliburton already does business in Iran.
Right, right. They actually, about a year and a half ago, announced that they would take no new business, but they still have an ongoing contract that's going to keep them in Iran for quite a while, and they do it through an offshore subsidiary that is legal, apparently, because the Justice Department has looked at it and has cleared it.
So it's working there. Some Democrats are unhappy about that and a lot else. Then there's Iraq. Now, there's oil business there, but there is an enormous amount of military support business there, which has been done through Halliburton's subsidiary, I guess, KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root. They're trying to spin that off. What's going on with that?
Is that all done? Excuse me?
Is that complete? It's all done? It's completely spun off?
Yes. They are. What they're doing right now is they're currently pricing it. It will be official probably within a week or so. It will be completely split off. There are actually right now two companies, Halliburton Company and KBR, Inc. And just to explain to listeners, what happened was is that Halliburton for years had essentially two big business lines. Mm. One was oilfield service. That generated the lion's share of the profit for Halliburton. But then it also had this business where it was an engineering firm and a government contractor. So if you wanted to build a giant natural gas plant in the swamps of Nigeria, for instance, you would turn to Halliburton because that was their expertise, doing very complex engineering in very remote places.
Or if you wanted to make war in Iraq.
Right. And even going back, if you remember the United States engagement in the Balkans, they brought in KBR to do logistics. And when you say logistics, it's delivering mail to the troops. It's washing their clothes. It's setting up bases and running the dining halls. It's sort of everything that you need to have a military presence so you can free up the U.S. Army to do the patrolling and the fighting.
That has been a gigantic and a controversial role in Iraq. Give us a sense of the scale and the controversy, Russell.
Well, I mean, billions and billions of dollars in revenue. I think at last count, it was about $16 billion had been generated by Halliburton.
And a big chunk of it, no bid, which raised eyebrows early on when this was Dick Cheney's former company, and he was not long out of the saddle.
Some of it certainly was no bid. The major logistics contract was bid competitively, but then there was a second contract, which was essentially to try to restore the Iraqi oil fields that was given to Halliburton on a no-bid basis. You know, the controversy was, and I wrote a story about this a couple of years ago, when Halliburton got this contract, they thought it was going to be a small, manageable contract like it was in the Balkans. And suddenly the Army was asking it to do things and on a scale that they had no preparation for, no early warning for, and Halliburton, instead of saying, no, we can't do it, took the attitude that we're going to do everything that's asked of us.
The poor dears, with those billions raining down on them, it must have been hell.
Well, you have to remember, though, that the margins, the profit that Halliburton makes on these contracts is actually fairly small. Mm. They make huge profits off their oilfield service work, and they only make 1 or 2 or 3% profit, at most 5 or 6, on their government contracting. So it was a huge headache and became a huge political headache for them, huge distraction, and they weren't really making much money.
And then, of course, we had this federal report not so long ago saying that $10 billion in waste and overcharges in Iraq, and 2.7 of those alleged here at Halliburton's feet.
Well, that's where I was going to get at, because what happened was is that when I visited, I was in Kuwait City, where Halliburton did a lot of its procurement early in the war, and I went around and visited some of the people Halliburton was buying for, and they were telling me stories of Halliburton showing up and saying, we need 600 sleeping bags tonight. It was just an incredible rush job, hundreds and hundreds of orders going out, and there was very little paperwork generated, and the paperwork that was generated when the auditors came in, they couldn't make sense of it, and that's where a lot of the controversy has come from, because frankly, the auditors have never really been able to figure out whether the money was appropriately spent or not.
So now they're peeling away from that, leaving that behind them, we're trying to, and peeling out for Dubai. What's the stock doing? Are investors saying yahoo to this, or not sure yet?
Well, you know, I have to say I've been on vacation the last couple of days. I don't know what the stock's done this week. The investors have generally been happy, though, with the move to break KBR off from Halliburton, so Halliburton can really focus on its core business.
So a pure play, but I don't know if purity is a word that can apply to a company that's in so deep in so many big fields. Russell Gold with The Wall Street Journal, thanks very much for bringing us in here today.
Happy. Thank you for having me.
I want to turn now to Austin, Texas, and Robert Bryce. He's managing editor of the Houston-based newsletter Energy Tribune. He's a contributing writer at the Texas Observer, and he's author of the book, Cronies, Oil, the Bushes, and the Rise of Texas, America's Superstate, in which he wrote extensively about Halliburton. Robert Bryce, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me, Tom.
So you put Halliburton in a kind of, set of crown jewels of Texas, a big business, big shoulders, big power players here. Who do you rank them among?
Well, my point in Cronies was just that this company, Halliburton and Brown & Root, which, as Russell pointed out, Halliburton has been split into these two main operating businesses,
mm-hmm.
Halliburton, which is the oil field services side, and KBR, or Kellogg Brown & Root.
Mm-hmm.
The KBR portion of that is relatively new. Halliburton bought Kellogg, I think, in the mid-90s. But for years, it was Brown & Root was the part of Halliburton that was really the power player. And that aspect of Halliburton, Brown & Root was purchased by Halliburton in the early 1960s. That was the locus of power for decades, really, in Texas politics. Remember, it was Brown and Root that was close to Lyndon Johnson. It was George Brown who was one of Lyndon Johnson's biggest political backers. And in fact, as I wrote in the book, that throughout Lyndon Johnson's career in politics, even going back to his very first run for Congress in the late 1930s, George Brown was one of his biggest backers. And then Johnson, in turn, rewarded Brown and Root with huge construction contracts. In fact, the biggest one was a dam that was built right outside of the city of Austin here, the Mansfield Dam, which dammed the Colorado River and created the first of the big Highland Lakes here in central Texas.
So that's what you call cronyism, and it's rolled right on forward, as you describe it, Robert Bryce, for decades.
Well, yes, because Halliburton and Brown and Root are part of that Texas power structure and have been for many decades that created that symbiotic relationship between the oil sector and the Texas political power structure. And it wasn't, of course, just Lyndon Johnson. The oil sector and the oil business supported George Bush the First in his runs for Congress and then later for the Senate. And, of course, then the rise of George W. Bush was largely funded by the Texas oil interests as well.
We're going to look at that, but let me ask you, when it comes to Dick Cheney and George W. Bush and Halliburton and the Iraq War, the title of your book is Cronies. Is that the right word to be applying here, or was this a patriotic big company stepping up to do what was asked by the White House?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, clearly the political connections with Halliburton and the last few Republican presidents are really quite remarkable. You look at the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, which is a group of citizens that are appointed by the president to review all of the government's most secret secrets. They have access to all the data from the CIA, the FBI, the National Security Agency, et cetera, throughout much of the Reagan administration and then part of the first Bush administration. There was a member of the Halliburton board sat on the PIFIAB and sat on that board. Ann Armstrong was her name. She was an advisor in the Nixon administration and worked in the Nixon White House. She later then became one of the lead members of the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board while she was sitting on the Halliburton board.
Mm.
Fast forward to today, where you have Ray Hunt, who was a big provider of funding for George W. Bush's campaign in 2000. He now sits on the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board and sits on the board of directors at Halliburton. I've asked Ray Hunt face-to-face, I said, do you use the data or the information you get from the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board when you're talking to Halliburton? He refused to answer the question. But, this is just one example of these many connections between Halliburton and the highest levels of the Bush administration. Then you have Dick Cheney, who, of course, was appointed to find a vice presidential candidate to run with George W. Bush, and then he himself becomes the candidate. What I think is truly remarkable, Robert Caro and others have written a great deal about the connections and alleged corruption between Brown and Root and Lyndon Johnson. Well, I think George Brown of Brown and Root would have been astonished if he knew that, up until last year, Dick Cheney, as a sitting vice president of the United States, was still getting deferred compensation payments from Halliburton.
That's what you call cozy.
Well, and Cheney, says, well, it's deferred compensation. It's money that is owed to me. That's fine, but it is a remarkable set of circumstances when you have a person at that level of power still having financial dealings with a big government contractor, and particularly one that's as controversial as Halliburton.
We're going to look in just a moment at tax accountability and maybe legal accountability. Let me ask you, Robert Bryce, you've watched this for a long time. What do you make of this fusillade of Democratic criticism here? Senator Hillary Clinton saying it's disgraceful. American companies are more than happy to get no-bid contracts like Halliburton and then turn around and say, we're not going to stay with our CEO, the president of our company, in the U.S. anymore. Byron Dorgan, Democrat, North Dakota, senator there. I want to know, is Halliburton trying to run away from bad publicity on their contracts? Chuck Schumer, senator from New York, saying what kind of tax or regulatory laws are they trying to circumvent? Is this an easy political whipping boy for the Democrats or a worthy target?
Well, to be honest, Tom, I think it's the former. Patrick Leahy said it was corporate greed at its worst. But from everything that I can tell, Halliburton is saying they're going to keep their corporate domicile here in the U.S. They're moving their corporate headquarters and their top officials to Dubai. But I can't see how any of this, would allow them to dodge taxes or to make any, and you know, I could be proven wrong, but yeah. I don't see how it reduces their accountability on any of the KBR business or any of the their accountability with regard to the overbilling. I think, you know, what's remarkable is that, you know, what seems to me a logical business move has been attacked as some nefarious kind of scheme, and you know, I don't see it.
Well, there's a lot of history here, though, and boys who have shown a willingness to play tough and play rough and sort of play the global geopolitical board very aggressively. Robert Bryce, stand by if you would. I want to go for a moment on this tax and maybe a little law to H. David Rosenblum. He joins us from Washington. He's director of the International Tax Program at New York University, co-chairman of the tax law firm Kaplan Drysdale. David Rosenblum, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, happy to do it.
So you're the tax guy with the global view. Halliburton says, no way, no how, we're skipping out on our taxes. We're still anchored in the USA, but our CEO, and therefore in ordinary parlance, our corporate headquarters will be in Dubai. As a tax guy, does that leave you confident that their Halliburton taxes will keep on flowing to the American treasury that's paid them so richly over the years?
Well, I don't have full information or even very much information.
I guess nobody does at this point.
Right. Well, the mere move of a CEO or headquarters doesn't have any tax effect as long as they retain U.S. incorporation. But I think what could be going on here, this is just speculation,
mm-hmm.
There are a number of companies have inverted, which is changing their corporate domicile so that the parent company is not a U.S. Company, but is a foreign company, and there are certain benefits from doing that, both in the United States and abroad. There's no indication that that's what they're going to do anytime soon, and there is a statute that Congress enacted in 2003 that's aimed squarely at corporate inversions. But that statute allows a company to invert to a foreign country in which there are substantial business activities.
Okay.
And one thing that could be happening here, again, this is just speculation, is that Halliburton is positioning itself so that at some point in time down the road, they could invert to Dubai, to the UAE, or to wherever they have substantial business activities. If they put more activities in a foreign country, it would make the argument in favor of beating this statute a lot stronger. That's something that
mm-hmm.
could be going on. There's no indication that that's what's happening here, and it would take a while, I think, for them to do that. I mean, they would have to build up their activities over there.
But you've got to put your nail in somewhere, and it could be the beginning of that. They've got thousands of employees in Houston. Be far fewer in Dubai at this point. Is it the number of employees, David Rosenblum,
well,
makes a difference, or the
statute,
billing?
Yeah, the statute is substantial business activities. One of the problems that occurs to me is that it's a single foreign country analysis. And my impression of Halliburton is that although they have a lot of activities outside the United States and particularly in the Middle East, they're not necessarily focused on any one country. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether my speculation is correct or not. But it's the only tax gimmick that I can think of that could possibly be applicable here, because moving the CEO's office per se, on its own, doesn't have any effect at all.
Robert Bryce, what about legal accountability? Investigations going on over the company's business dealings in Iraq and Nigeria by the Justice Department. Of course, there's the overbilling and waste charges in Congress. From the federal government are out there. If the CEO's in Dubai, is he further out of reach of congressional oversight, of federal judicial oversight?
Well, I mean, unless Lazar is planning on going to Dubai and never returning to Houston, I don't think that that's the case. I think if anything, this move is going to kind of turn up the screws, at least in Congress, to increase the scope of the investigations and to. Henry Waxman has already said that he's going to hold hearings on this. So I think for the near term, it means that Halliburton is going to be more under the microscope, and I can't see how this move, as Mr. Rosenblum said, how it will allow them to shed any of their legal responsibilities under the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act or Foreign Corrupt Practices Act or any of those things, because they still have not moved their corporate domicile to Dubai.
Over time, they could be positioned to do that. I want to begin to bring our listeners in, if I may. Robert Bryce, David Rosenblum. We've got Kingsley joining us from Norwich, Connecticut. Kingsley, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a question for you. Do you think that the move will hurt American interest, especially when we think of all the enemies we have created in the world, especially the Iraq war? Don't you think it's not a wise decision for them to make that move now?
Why would it hurt American interest, Kingsley? They're going to be doing more business in the region, closer to where the oil fields and the need is. Why would that hurt American interests?
But don't you think that the war we are fighting right now, there will be a target because of the move they are making now to Dubai?
Let me put it to our guests, Robert Bryce. How do you expect Halliburton to be seen moving its CEO to Dubai? Is this solidarity with the region, or?
I mean, I've been to Dubai a couple times in the last 18 months, and it is, you know, it is a fascinating place. I mean, it is, you know, if there's a center for rock and roll capitalism right now on Earth
right.
that is moving faster than Dubai, I don't know where it is. Something like 25% of the world's construction cranes are now in Dubai.
Super skyscrapers, super wealth, super momentum.
It's really astounding. But I think, I mean, there is something to the caller's question in that, you know, now at a time when, at least in the American political realm, Arab bashing and kind of anti-Islamic rhetoric is very common, to see a company that is this big and this well-known moving into the heart of the Persian Gulf, I mean, it's a little bit odd from kind of the macro-political sense. But, I mean, again, on the business sense for Halliburton, it seems to there's a lot of logic there.
That's where the business is. That's where the oil is. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Edward. Edward, you're on the air.
Guys, I mean, this is a tad bit ridiculous. Why don't we just call it what it is? Dick Cheney gave some of his friends in a company that he helped to form a necessary platform for his business to gain extreme wealth and oil under the guise of weapons of mass destruction. And, I mean, this is totally ridiculous, man. Why can't people just call this what it is? The Senate and the subcommittees need to take a very careful look at this administration, because everything is starting to come into fruition as far as the cards that they played.
Yeah.
We're starting to see the real picture.
Edward, let us pick that up. Robert Bryce, what about it? You titled your book Cronies. You could hear the American citizen right there saying, I see what this is, and it doesn't smell right.
Well, look, I mean, you know, as far as Iraq goes, the fact is, no matter how you slice it, the war was about oil. It was about the fact that, I don't necessarily think it was some grab by the super majors, ExxonMobil or Shell or whoever, to grab the oil and own it themselves. But the fact was that George W. Bush and his the group of neoconservatives decided that Saddam Hussein could not be allowed to control Iraq's oil, and they decided they were going to take that control away from him. You know, as far as, you know, whether this was, again, some nefarious thing to, you know, enrich Halliburton, you know, we can argue that all day. Clearly, Halliburton has made some profits, but, I mean, the war's been a disaster. And so, you know, if there was some grand scheme here to enrich a certain group of people, it certainly hadn't worked yet.
Mm. David Rosenblum, when you look at what Halliburton's doing, you're an international tax guy, are they just part of the parade? Is this just, you know, another of many big American corporations looking to be in the middle of businesses that are gravitating elsewhere?
Well, I don't think there's too many businesses that have moved their headquarters operation outside of the United States. There was a whole spate of inversions prior to the enactment of this, for tax reasons, prior to the enactment of Section 7874 of the Code in 2003. I think that pretty much stopped it. The statutory provision is pretty easily evadable if one wants to. Like a lot of things that Congress screams about, it doesn't do too effective a job at really blocking things, leaves a lot of gaps, and I think people could get around it. But I don't sense that that's what's happening, at least in the immediate time now. One thing I would observe, though, is that Halliburton is a public company, And these questions about what they're doing, I mean, the best source of information is Halliburton itself. They've got an obligation under the securities laws, if they're doing anything that would have an effect on their stock, to explain why they're doing this. And I don't know, I have not seen everything that they've put out, but I would have thought they can't do this in the dead of night or do some kind of surgical strike and keep it a mystery, not as a public company. They have an obligation to make to explain themselves.
But Robert Bryce and others are saying, well, look, that's where there's an awful lot of energy business now. They're getting out of the military services business. If that's where it's growing, isn't that enough on its face?
Well, if that's what's going on, it makes a certain amount of sense, yes.
If I can jump in, Tom.
Yes, Robert.
You know, I think that part of this, too, is that, you know, and Russell mentioned this a little bit, I think it's part of Halliburton's effort to try and reposition itself completely. You know, it's not just about moving to Dubai. Remember, they're spinning off all of their ownership in KBR as well. So I think by moving their CEO and president and some of their top officers to Dubai, they're saying, look, we're no longer a military contractor. That's not our business anymore. We're focused just on oil field services, and we want to be engaged with the national oil companies. And, in fact, when you look at Halliburton's press release from Sunday, they, in fact, say, we want to focus, here's the quote, focus on expanding its customer relationships with national oil companies. That's where they see the, and six of the ten of the largest national oil companies on the planet are based in the Persian Gulf.
And yet, David Rosenblum, you say, whatever our sense of globalization, it's still unusual for an American company of this size to move its headquarters out of the USA.
Yeah, I can't think of any U.S. company, I'm sure there are some, I just can't think of any, that has retained itself, remained as a U.S. company, but moved its headquarters abroad. That's just not common. For one thing, it doesn't normally suit the convenience of the executives who want to live in the United States.
But now they're out there. It's been suggested that maybe that's in part because American border security, immigration has become so strict, it's hard for some of their Middle Eastern customers to visit them here. David Rosenblum at Kaplan Drysdale, Director of the International Tax Program at NYU. Mr. Rosenblum, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm very happy to.
We've been joined from Texas in Austin. Robert Bryce is with us. He is author of Cronies, Oil, the Bushes, and the Rise of Texas, America's Super State. We're joined right now as well from New York by Youssef Ibrahim, columnist for the New York Sun, consultant with the Strategic Energy Investment Group of Dubai, formerly a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He spent a long time in the Middle East, including 3 years. He's just back from there. Youssef Ibrahim, thanks very much for joining us.
Hello there.
How do you think the news of Halliburton's move to Dubai will be received in Dubai? Is that just what this super hot joint expects at this point?
Oh, I'm sure everybody in Dubai, especially the government of Dubai, is ecstatic about that. This verifies the status of Dubai as a global center for doing business. They've been trying to establish this image for a long, long time, and they worked very hard on it. I think this gives them a tremendous boost.
And how do you see it from Halliburton's perspective? What does this say about what they're up to? And does it look like they're, you know, the question we've put out there, are they on the march in competing for global oil business or on the run from their troubles in the States?
I think they are rushing towards what I would call a comfort zone. Dubai is a comfort zone because what many people here, for example, in the United States would consider corruption is not necessarily considered a vice in a place like Dubai. It's a very freewheeling atmosphere where all kinds of businessmen come and they don't expect too many questions to be asked. Don't forget that Dubai, from its inception, was conceived as a place where you can, how shall we say this, go around the rules. I mean, Dubai started out as a place from which you smuggled gold to India and the subcontinent, and then it evolved, and today is still considered the largest spot on the face of the earth where you launder money. I mean, all the Russian moguls came there. I don't mean that it's a place that spends all its time focused on doing things that are irregular, but basically it prefers to let people work under soft lights instead of under spotlights.
But they're also looking for legitimacies there. I mean, as long as Halliburton is incorporated in Delaware and has all those thousands in its offices in Houston, isn't it still liable to oversight by American law, Yusuf? No matter what Dubai's
history. We have observed, Halliburton is a known quantity, it's not that we know enough about it. It works in areas and with countries that deal in oil and in weapons, and most of these countries are oil-rich producers. And Halliburton has worked with Iran in the past, directly and indirectly. Mm. And it works in the area of oil specifically, in the Middle East, even more specifically, is an area where you need some ambiguity when it comes to things like paying commissions. Other people would call it bribes, but, you know, this is the way business is done out there. And you can't be constantly scrutinized under those circumstances. Then we cannot forget, of course, that Halliburton is now under tremendous scrutiny and a number of investigations, especially concerning KBR. It has had a history that has disturbed some people in Congress and Senate in the Iraq contracts. In other words, there are enough questions about whether Halliburton has been cleaner than clean in the United States, and to suggest that they would feel a lot more comfortable in a place like Dubai.
Robert Bryce, what about Halliburton's position competitively? You know, Yusuf Ibrahim says it looks like it's gravitating toward a comfort zone there, a zone of ambiguity. Is that necessary for an oil field services company to compete these days with national oil companies and all the rest? Does Schlumberger have to go out of the country to do that?
Well, clearly Halliburton sees Schlumberger as their big competitor globally now. And Yusuf is right. I mean, it's interesting in some regards to look at the scrutiny that Halliburton's under now. I look at some of the investigations that have been ongoing, particularly by the Department of Justice, on Halliburton regarding bribery in Nigeria. Remember, the Department of Justice began that investigation on a KBR contract that was struck while Dick Cheney was the head of Halliburton.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been absolutely no forward movement on the Department of Justice's investigation of Halliburton. You know, maybe
so
that's coincidence.
Sits.
Maybe there's nothing there. But
Also, if I may jump in here, Schlumberger is French, and the French and France have a different take on this whole concept of how to do business than we do.
Though they've got big feet planted in the U.S. and elsewhere as well. But Robert, does it really remove Halliburton from American legal oversight if its CEO David Lazar sits at the top of a very tall skyscraper in Dubai?
No, I don't think it does. I think that, you know, still, as long as they are domiciled in the U.S., as long as they have substantial business interests here, they're going to be subject to the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, even if the Department of Justice doesn't pursue them. But I think Youssef's point is well taken, and that is the French and Schlumberger in particular and other foreign companies have long had a different kind of view of what's acceptable in terms of paying commissions or paying, you know, fixers to set up business deals or whatever. I'm not suggesting that Halliburton is designing, you know, the only reason they're going over there is so that they can more easily pay bribes. But the fact is that, you know, I think that this, you know, the other part of this that we haven't discussed yet is this is part of a broader shift, I think, a shift both in financial services and in terms of political capital and deal-making toward Dubai, toward the Persian Gulf, and away from the traditional money centers in New York and London. You know, Dubai is really emerging as a powerhouse, and I see it as really as a confirmation of this shift in gravity. One point being that the emergence that will happen very quickly is the Dubai Mercantile Exchange is going to start trading crude oil futures in Dubai based on Persian Gulf sour crude. That's never happened before. The world benchmarks have always been the Brent out of the North Sea and West Texas Intermediate. Now Dubai is saying, no, we're not accepting that anymore. We're going to start trading futures on crude that's coming out of Oman. Mm. And I think that is really a significant development in terms of the futures market in the global energy business.
Yusuf, New York and Houston, for that matter, looming a little bit less large as action moves to Dubai, as Halliburton moves to Dubai?
Well, that's absolutely true. This last point is been happening. If you remember all the way back to the Davos conference this year, we began to hear rumbles from the American business community and the American business establishment suggesting that, oh God, doing business in America is becoming difficult. We are losing business to London because the British don't have such stringent rules. I think part of this is a campaign of pressure so that the United States and the Securities and Exchange Commission ease up on their scrutiny, which has, of course, increased tremendously in light of the corporate compensations and the CEO absolutely amazing numbers of packages that we have seen in the past 2 years. And there is a pushback, if you will, from the business community. And I think in that sense, Halliburton is part of that. Because after all, who runs Halliburton? I mean, Dick Cheney ran Halliburton. People who are very much part of the American power establishment run Halliburton. People who really think that they know better than the average public and don't need to have their time consumed with silly questions and details.
But when these companies have ladled so deeply out of the public trough, it gives, I think, Americans a pretty big interest in what they're up to. Let's turn to some listeners here. In Lynn Haven, Florida, Larry is calling. Larry, you're on the air.
Hey, I don't see this as a tax issue at all. I see it as a clear sign as to what our energy policy is going to be. A company that is in a position to know that policy isn't buying up cornfields in the Midwest, they're moving to Dubai.
Right. So is that just realism talking, Larry, or do you see a kind of a two-faced policy talking alternative energy but positioning for profits right in the old oil patch?
You hit the nail on the head.
Let's get another from Iowa City. Iowa, Doug, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You had brought up a point a few minutes back that not a lot of people have touched on. While I am just as suspicious of Halliburton in their Iraq contract issue, I think that a big part of why they're moving may be, as you pointed out, that it's incredibly difficult now for anyone from the Middle East to travel to the United States.
That is their customers in the Middle East, maybe.
Exactly. And I work in the wood industry, and I have had numerous examples that I have had customers tell me that they, because of the hassles with immigration, they would not even begin the visa process. And we're talking relatively large deals that would be good for not only me, but good for companies that I work with in the U.S., and they've said, it's not worth the hassle, we get treated badly, the visas are almost impossible to get. And the people I'm dealing with, these are multi-million dollar companies in the Middle East.
But they've got a name like Muhammad or Ibrahim or you name it, and it just looks too daunting for them to come
exactly
to you.
So I'm sure that if you're part of the Saud family, the Bandar Bush
yeah,
guys, you can get a visa with no problem. But the average multimillionaire Pakistani businessman has a lot of trouble.
Doug, that's an interesting perspective. Yusuf Ibrahim, how about it? Middle Easterners not so keen on coming to the U.S. to do business because of some of the security reception we've thrown up.
You can get carried away with this. I mean, my name is Ibrahim, and I come in and go out, but I was New York Times a person or a foreign correspondent. The same goes for big businessmen. They don't have, I mean, when somebody like Sultan or Salman or any of these, the Saudi royal family, who are really the business in Saudi Arabia, go to the American embassy, I assure you they get their visa right there at the ambassador's office.
But our caller Doug's customers, he's calling in from Iowa. They may not be royals, but he's saying they don't want to come.
I'm sure some people do have trouble. Smaller business would have trouble. But on the other hand, we cannot forget that America is still the biggest business on the face of the earth. So it's not that we need them. They need us too. And even though we've had 9/11, and we've had a big period after 9/11 where there was some hesitation, essentially the business of business has gone on. I don't think Halliburton is doing this because its clients are having any hard time getting to the United States.
But it's sure going to be easier to sit down for dinner with, well, you name it, the big world.
It's easy all around. It's absolutely the easiest thing to sit down to dinner with Americans, with Russians, with Kazakhstanis, with a dictator here and a dictator there in Dubai.
And do the deals. Shirley's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Shirley, you're on the air.
If Halliburton moves all of its executives and its records to Dubai, what happens to those records, and are they accessible for the Justice Department when they are doing the security checks, the
investigations? If they would gear those up, could they get at it? And we should say, they're saying a bunch of their executives will still be in Houston. But what about it? Over time, as David Rosenblum pointed out earlier, Robert Bryce, you know, things go where they go. Can they still say, we want those records if they're in a vault in Dubai?
Well, Tom, that's a good question. I'll just briefly address the prior question. That was, I was in Saudi Arabia about a year ago, and I talked to some very wealthy Saudi businessmen who were having trouble coming to the U.S. So the visa problems, particularly even for Saudi students and for other Arab students, are ongoing, is my impression. So that's one issue. As far as the records go, that's hard to say. I mean, Halliburton hasn't made any indication that they are moving their corporate domicile to Dubai. And, you know, at the moment, it seems that all of their records are open for subpoena. And just because their CEO is going to be spending most of his time in Dubai doesn't mean he's going to be immune from subpoenas once he comes back to Houston. So, I think we'll have to wait and see on that question.
Let's get a call from Robert in Billerica, Massachusetts. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think that they're traitors.
Why? They're businessmen.
I think that they've taken everything they can out of America, and now they're fleeing over there. And they should be, we should at least send forensic accountants to oversee everything that they do while they're there.
But what about the argument that says, we're not traitors, we're aggressive capitalists doing the necessary to compete in a global economy when the oil business is recentering in the Middle East and Asia? Don't buy it?
Don't buy it.
Straight up, Robert, thanks for your call. Yusuf Ibrahim, what about extradition treaties between Dubai and the United States? Who knows? But if it should ever come to that, is it a safe haven?
It has never happened.
What has? No one's been extradited from Dubai to the USA?
Unless you are a Filipino servant who killed your master or something like this. But the people that matter, the people who are important, as a matter of fact, it's a religion in Dubai that is a bit like Switzerland. You remember Switzerland was trying, had Mark Rich living there for up to now when Giuliani had indicted him and he was sort of risking 400 years in prison. And it's a religion in Switzerland that tax evasion is simply not a sin. It's a religion in Dubai that issues of money are not a sin, period. End of story.
Well, we'll see what happens. Robert Bryce, Houston, feeling a little notched down today or feeling like these are our boys out in the world doing the necessary?
Oh, you know, Tom, Houston is, they're not worried about David Lasar moving to Dubai. Everyone said after Enron failed that, Houston's going to be down for the count. Houston's doing just fine. They're not searching. There's no tears shed in Houston. I think if there is a more international city in the United States than Houston, I can't name it. I think this is viewed as just this is part of the way that the global business is going, and I think it concerns Houston not at all.
Maybe one day an emeritus office for Dick Cheney high above the Dubai skyline.
Well, or if Patrick Fitzgerald has his way, maybe a different type of
maybe
accommodation.
Different accommodations. Robert Bryce, it's been great having you with us this hour. Author of Cronies, writes for, well, all kinds of people, the Energy Tribune and the Texas Observer, joining us from Austin, Texas. Robert, thank you very much for your time this hour. And Yusuf Ibrahim, fresh back from Dubai, welcome back to the USA, Yusuf Ibrahim, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.